Comments made on Cerospectives are those of the individuals and do not represent Cerotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this month in tech on Cerospectives. I'm Steve Sawson, and I'll be hosting this evening's edition along with a wonderful panel of co-hosts. Our first host is Byron Lee. Byron Lee is a ham radio operator. KC9. Is it EDK? EEK.
It's EEK. Mm-hmm.
Eek. He's a broadcast personality, an audio engineer. He's just about everything. I'll let him talk about himself. But one of the really cool things that Byron's involved with is the directionsforme.org service, which allows you to get information directions that are on packages and other such things. Byron, could you give us a quick maybe 20-second tour of Directions For Me?
Yeah, so directionsforme.org or .com, both will work, is a website where you can search for something or type in scan a barcode with a barcode scanner and essentially get directions for pretty much anything from hamburger helper to NyQuil. So you can read how to brown the meat or how much dosage you should be taking. So that's what Directions For Me is.
Or how much dosage of meat you should take. Anyway, thanks for joining us this evening. Pratik Patel wears a number of hats. He's the CEO and president and CEO of EasyFire, a firm dedicated to promoting the usability and accessibility of devices, websites, software, and other electronic material. He's the current chair of the Information Access Committee for the American Council for the Blind, ACB, and serves as the president of ACB's New York affiliate. Pratik, welcome to the show. Maybe you can give us a little more info about yourself and some of the projects you're involved with.
Oh, boy. An hour? No. So, really, really quickly, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a really pleasure to be here. Most of my daytime job involves working with a lot of companies, government, institutions, and just working on a lot of cool accessibility-related projects, making IT and information available to people with all sorts of disabilities.
Well, thanks for joining us. A pleasure to have you back, as always. Daryl Chandro is a fellow who needs almost no introduction. He's been on a few times. He is a blind accessibility evangelist, internet radio broadcaster, assistive technology instructor, and technical writer living in Tempe, Arizona, where it's probably a little warmer than it is here. He's the publisher of the Blind Access Journal, and as with our other distinguished guest, has a list about a mile long of some of the things he's involved with. Daryl, maybe a quick 30-second overview of some of your projects.
Oh, awesome. Great. And I am happy to be here again this month, and good evening, everybody. Yes, I do, my friend Allison and I do a podcast where we demonstrate and teach iOS apps. I write about accessibility evangelism. We do a weekly radio show on ACB Radio Interactive. I do a number of work on a number of accessibility consulting and advocacy things, whatever I can do to help out. My goal is accessibility evangelism, to help make sure that information and technology is, in fact, accessible and usable by blind people.
Accessibility evangelist somebody who, says things like, "Put your hands on your screen reader. Can you feel the power?"
Why not? Okay, sure. Yes. Why not?
We did a YouTube video of you doing this, I think, somewhere in a very public place.
Oh, wow. I don't remember doing that, but
if you could submit a video of yourself doing that, I don't know if we could put it on the here on SPN, but I'll find some place to host it, that's for sure.
I don't know if I have the charisma or not. We'll just have to find out.
Oh, I can help out with hosting that video.
Yeah, we'll get that posted for you.
The Church of Accessibility. I think we need to start a new religion.
Wow.
Well, on that note, folks, so let's go ahead and get started. We've got quite a few articles to cover this evening, and of course, we will try to keep them as fair and balanced as we can between the various technologies. This is always a challenge, as you know, depending on what's come out over the past month and what's getting a lot of press and that sort of thing. So we'll do our best, and we'll start off with Apple because, well, just because one of the exciting things in the Apple arena is the release of Mountain Lion 10.8, Apple's new and long-awaited operating system. And we'll have that article up in just a moment. Ars Technica has done a review, as has many other people all over the world. It's kind of amazing how fast these reviews appear, and I think the reviews are all favorable. There's a number of new features in Mountain Lion, but the big question that I get asked is it worth the $19.95 price tag? That's $19.95, not $1,900. And, you know, I have my favorite features in Mountain Lion. Those of you who have used it, what are your favorite features, and do you think it's worth the $20 price tag?
This is Pratika. I would say most definitely $19 is actually pretty cheap for this particular update, especially if you use Lion for some time. I've been using Mountain Lion for the past couple of months and, you know, testing it for a variety of things, and you know, quite a couple of the features that I love using are the dictation features. If you use iOS devices, you know that in the latest iterations, you can use dictations to type. And you can do that on Mountain Lion. There are all sorts of share buttons all over the place. You can send tweets, and Facebook is coming, and other places to share. Stability is much more improved. A lot of issues I saw with Lion have been solved with Mountain Lion. And yeah, I think it's definitely worth it. And reading that Ars Technica review is going to take you a couple hours because it's like 25,000 words, but it's worth it.
And they actually have an ebook version of it that you can download if you don't want to sit there and click on the next page over and over and over again. So that's kind of a nice extra plus Ars Technica gave us.
It's a very thorough review. Daryl, any thoughts on Mountain Lion? Are you using it?
I cannot, actually. I have a late 2007 MacBook that will not run Mountain Lion. Oh, no. I am done with the OS upgrades, apparently, until I get new hardware.
And, you know, that's actually a frustration I've heard quite a bit, that there are, of course, hardware requirements for this. I don't remember what they all are. I know video, the graphics chip, is one requirement that you need. You need to have a certain graphics chip or newer in order to run it, and you need to make sure that your Mac or MacBook meets the minimum specifications. So that's kind of got a little people a bit saddened. Those with 2007 MacBooks may not be able to do it, as Daryl indicated. There is the dictation feature, the sharing feature, the... gosh, there's a ton of features. I think it's kind of funny, one of the features that everyone is excited about in the blind vision impaired community is not so much a feature, but a bug fix, and that is that forever the extras menu, this is the menu that has Dropbox in it and other icons in it, has not been accessible. That is to say, third-party things such as Dropbox haven't been accessible, and that now works on Mountain Lion, and a lot of people are saying it's worth the $20 just to have access to that. So even though it's not an official feature, people love that. So
I'd like to chime in for a minute. This is Lisa Salinger, and I am monitoring chat and Twitter to bring the opinions of our listeners to everyone. And there is, at the moment, a poll on the screen. And we'd like, if you are interested in doing so, we'd like for you to take that, fill it out, and we'll kind of get a better idea of what those of you who are joining us are thinking and maybe what you are installing.
You know, I think the pricing of iOS X Mountain Lion... that's a combo of two OSs. iOS X Mountain Lion. iOS is kind of sneaking into Mountain Lion, so you can almost say that. But I think the pricing of Mountain Lion is sort of the future of operating systems to come. I think they're going to start charging a smaller amount per upgrade rather than charging to get continuous updates on one specific thing, and you get free service packs and all that. And I think it really helps to get people who otherwise would not be able to afford to get into that new operating system. It sort of pushes them towards it, so I'm all for it.
Absolutely, and I remember when I upgraded to Leopard, it was $120 for the upgrade, mm-hmm. This is a huge discount, and Lion wasn't very expensive either. It is interesting, the slip of the tongue, the iOS Mountain Lion, you're right, Mountain Lion is a lot more iOS-like. It even has a notification center now, which is accessible via gesture from the trackpad, and apps put notifications in it, just like they do on iOS. So Mountain Lion is released, and that's very exciting stuff for a lot of Mac fans. If you want to know more about Mountain Lion, of course, there's a gazillion reviews, including the one that we're sharing, or David Woodbridge, who is from Australia, has done a number of podcasts on Mountain Lion, and they are available on iBlink Radio. I can't even say it, but that's where they are, and
best
of course on
ever.
Apple Viz.
Ooh, yeah.
He does some great, great podcasts. They're definitely, definitely worth a listen. I learn things from them all the time.
Absolutely.
Why should I, a Windows user, care about Mountain Lion? A good question, and I'm sure it's one that many of our listeners are asking themselves right now. So I guess let's go over to Daryl. As a Windows user, I know you have a Mac, but you're also a Windows user. Why should you care about Mountain Lion?
A couple of reasons, I think. The operating systems, it feels like the operating systems are all kind of starting to merge, right? They're all kind of having similar features now. So we have an app store and kind of thing in Windows 8, just like we have the app store in Lion and Mountain Lion. So I think we should care because obviously we should be informed. Also, if we have a Windows shop, and what I mean by that is like if you're an IT person and you have you work in a Windows shop, I think that the Mac operating systems are becoming more serious contenders over time, and there's more and more and more. Apple has been the consumer. Pretty much in the consumer space and not so much in the corporate space. But now with iPhones in the corporate space and iPads, you guys see more decision makers saying we're bringing Macs into the shop.
Push.
So,
Ranger Station.
Yikes. So anyway, that's why we should care, I think, just more proliferation of the operating system into the workplace.
Great. Any other thoughts on why you, as a Windows user, might care about Mountain Lion?
Absolutely.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Byron. It's okay.
I was just going to say that I almost said it again. OS X Mountain Lion is going to feel a lot more like Windows than Windows does in the very near future because the Windows 8 Metro environment is so different and so alien to a lot of us. And, of course, the accessibility is not there yet either. With the OS X environment, you're still going to have a desktop or a, what do they call it, a launch pad with actual icons and something resembling a start menu. Well, that would be your dock. And it's going to maybe be a little bit less of a severe change for people to move over to Mac than it would be to move over to Windows 8. So I think that's one reason why we ought to think about maybe switching over.
And Pratik?
I think, as blind users, we especially need to look at Macs and the iOS devices because we see Apple improving VoiceOver and accessibility features all the time. They add things, they improve things, and these are included features without we having to pay anything. And I think that that evolution is really, really interesting and fascinating to watch. And if you're not planning to update or get a Mac, at least you want to look out and at least you want to watch and see what people are doing and what people are saying, because it's becoming really, really popular.
Absolutely. I also think, there's always been a learning curve, and there will always be a learning curve, I think, if you go from Windows to a Mac. But if you are an iOS user and you're now going to a Mac, that learning curve won't be as steep. As we mentioned, the dictation feature is there, the notification thing is there, and so there's a lot of the launch pad is there, so there's a lot of iOS-like features now in Mountain Lion, so that learning curve is still there, but it's not as steep as it was, so very exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's look at Microsoft and... I'm sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
Sorry, I find our poll results to be interesting. We have a split audience. 6 said they don't have a Mac, and we have 6 people that do have Macs, and they're divided right down the middle. So 3 have installed it, 3 have not, at least at this point. So very, wow. Very interesting stuff.
Very interesting.
I find, you know, you were asking also about, is it worth the $19.95? And of course, you don't want to throw it away on just anything, but I think of how many hours of playing with new stuff $19.95 can bring you, and it's almost worth that in and of its own, you know, if you're kind of that bent that you enjoy learning about new technology. But
very
I
true.
Think we're going to see the same thing with Windows. We're going to see that lower price point.
One thing I'd be curious about, and we haven't really touched upon this, but maybe some of our listeners might comment in the chat about it, and we'll come back to it in a few minutes maybe, is the, if you haven't installed it, why not? Is it, are you, one of the comments I hear frequently is, you know, I'm going to wait for the next update to come out, 10.8.1 or 2, you know, let Apple get the initial bugs worked out, and, you know, maybe not be on the cutting edge of this stuff, but be a little bit safer and a little bit further behind. And, you know, that's a pretty good reason, I think. I'm just curious if there might be any others. If there are, certainly let us know in the chat. While you do that, though, we now move on to Microsoft. Microsoft, which is moving your office to the cloud. And we have an article coming up here in just a second about that. So if you are in your office, hang on to your chair because you're about to go into the cloud.
And be up in the sky when I'm trying to work, you know how distracting that is?
Yeah, don't jump out of your chair.
Come on, why not?
So office in the cloud, what do people think about this? I mean, everything seems to be moving into the cloud, it seems.
I think it's going to bite us in the butt eventually when a server goes down and a really important document's on it and you've got it nowhere but the cloud. I think it's a great idea, but oh boy, what a way to put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
I have to say, I read a series of books by Robin Wasserman called Crashed, Skin, and Wired. They were about it was a science fiction book, but the point is in this book, this girl, they had, everybody had what was called a zone. Each person had this place, their virtual zone on the internet, and basically this girl became, you know, persona non grata, and became an unperson. So what did the government do? They just deleted her zone. They just deleted everything that she ever had online. She just disappeared completely. And she had no, basically, little or no recourse. So there you go, folks. I mean, if it goes away, if you didn't back it up, then you have nothing. That's why I always recommend whenever you're getting ready to do an iOS update, don't just do your iCloud backup, but plug your device into your computer and manually right-click that device and do a backup in iTunes to your computer.
Amen, Brother Shandro. Amen.
Yeah, you know, when I look at this moving to the cloud, especially in the case of Office, I think I find this move pretty fascinating from Microsoft. I mean, Apple seems to be doing that with iCloud, although they're not so explicit about it. I think they're really trying to wean people in. But Microsoft in its next update is being really explicit about, you know, just saving to the cloud by default. Whenever, if you have an online account, it will download your apps depending on your subscription level. So what Microsoft seems to be trying to do, as far as I can tell, is that they're really trying to see if people would pay on a monthly basis for their plan instead of buying one office or getting office from someplace. We seem to be moving in a really fascinating direction. What I remain concerned about is the accessibility. And even if the accessibility is there, what I really remain concerned about is the efficiency. How quickly can I do things that in the same way that I've been able to do, at least as quickly as I have been able to do on the desktop, am I going to be able to do that in the same way on the cloud? And that remains a big concern of mine, especially as a blind user.
Here's another thought. Here's another quick thought, is that if you want to talk about access from the cloud, it kind of feels like we're going full circle, right? So back in the 1960s and 1970s, we had, you know, dumb terminals, right? You had your screen and your keyboard was connected to a mainframe computer, and everything was done on the mainframe. And then we had this revolution, and we went to desktop computers, where the more the intelligence was in the computer, and you could do work standalone, and you could mobilize, and you could spread out, right? Well, now that we have seen the proliferation of the internet, and we are almost globally connected, not quite, but almost. Now it's interesting. It feels like we're kind of going back in the other direction with this, right? Now everything is back in the cloud again. It might not be on just one or two computers, but it's on this big, big, huge glob of computers called the cloud. And now look at Chromebooks, right? I mean, if you want to talk about cloud, if you a Chromebook relies on total connectivity into the cloud.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's hard to say. It's an interesting shift. It's one that, you know, a lot of companies are making. Very, 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 very interesting sort of shift. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think there are, though, people who don't are not always connected to the internet, you know, in an airplane or on a train or whatever, and how is all of that synchronization going to work? Obviously, I'm sure they've thought that through, but to me, that would be, a big question mark. I know when I get home, I have my data often shut off, and when I get home, you know, it takes a second for, well, more than a second for my iPhone to sync and update all the stuff in the various clouds that it's connected to and so forth. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but either way, Office is coming to the cloud, or you're going into the cloud, or something, and that's exciting stuff. Other exciting stuff is...
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I wonder how many people are using the cloud, and Lisa sort of alluded to this in the chat room. How many people are using the cloud without even realizing it? You know, I mean, stuff like Dropbox and Gmail and all this other stuff, it's cloud computing, and yet they make it so interesting and such an innovative service that you sort of don't even realize that this is something kind of different from just visiting a static web page.
It truly is, yeah. That's definitely true. What do people think about it? Maybe put some comments in the chat. I think Daryl is putting one in. I can hear him typing away over there. So I'll have to see what happens. Windows 8 is launching.
Yay.
Yes, you can hear all the excitement, the applause, and everything else. October 26th.
I'm not sure what I think.
I'm scared.
October 26th. Anyone counting down the days? What are people thinking about this? We have an article coming up here in just a second. We'll be on your screens about Windows 8, and it's October 26th launch. Does anyone know if it's going to work?
Well, I've been using it. It works, but it's radical new paradigm. And, you know, what I can say about it is that I think a lot of people are going to be extremely surprised at the changes that Microsoft has made, and they're just jumping in with you know, 2 feet in their head at the same time. So I'm not sure how much of their body is going to be sticking out after they're done with it. But I think what we're going to see is people not happy with a lot of the changes that they made. And it's going to take Microsoft a couple of years, and, you know, I think that until the next update, to really convince people that this is a good idea. Unlike Apple, who's been slowly changing their operating system to fit with the mobile, what Microsoft has decided to do is completely revamp the operating system to make it look like their phone. Your desktop applications will still work, you still have a desktop mode, but it's really not the same thing.
Shouldn't they maybe look at the sales of the Windows Phone and scratch their head and go, I wonder if we should make our desktops look like our phones. It doesn't even seem like anybody really wants to buy our phones.
But I can't. I'll say this for Microsoft: it is a really gutsy move.
It is. Yeah, you're gonna get
mad. Something. It's something that we haven't seen from Microsoft since the introduction of Windows 95. I mean, the changes between 3.1 and 95 were radical, and I think the changes between Windows 7 and the Vista 7/Windows 8 are as radical.
Wow. Well, the introduction
of
the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
I was just saying, the introduction to the to Windows of things like the search bar and the start menu were strokes of genius, but then at the same time they keep changing things, and it seems like they're just changing it for the sake of making a change. An example is getting around in the control panel and finding out where that one setting you want to change. Where is that? It's getting harder and harder to find it. Windows XP, it was so simple. You kind of learned that, and then all of a sudden, 7, everything's changed around, moved around, and now in 8, I mean, you're not even going to have the same looking environment anymore. It's just going to be very difficult. People are going to be banging their heads against the monitors, and they're no longer made out of those glass tubes anymore, so it's not going to make that satisfying thunk sound anymore.
Wow.
I'm just a little worried that people are going to be pulling their hair out over this new change.
I've heard people refer to Windows 8 as the what were we thinking version.
Yeah.
I'd like to get the input of those in the chat room. We have another poll up, and this one is about Windows 8 and whether or not you think you'll install it. So feel free to give us your feedback, and we will share in a little bit.
I'm wondering if anyone's going to rush out and buy it. That's the big question. There's always anticipation that builds around this stuff, and as of yet, I haven't heard anyone saying, geez, I can't wait to go out on October, 26th.
And
26th at midnight, wait in line, with everyone else around the block to be the first to own it.
I think the day that somebody goes out and waits in a line for a Microsoft product, I should say Microsoft operating system, is the day that I think we know that the company has turned it completely around. I know people have done it for Xbox, but not much else.
Apple is trying to emulate their iOS platform on their desktop. Maybe Windows should just emulate their successful product. It's going to be the first operating system where you have to shoot 20 guys before you can edit a document.
Oh, no.
On that note, we do have a special on SPN, and I think we have a link for that, on Windows 8 by Jeremy Carey from NFB 2012, the convention that just wrapped up here not too long ago. That is on SPN. There's also a bunch of convention interviews, ACB and NFB convention archives, and a tour of APH. I've always wanted to go there, American Printing House for the Blind, all on the homepage of iBlink Radio, which is a great app if you don't have it.
Yeah,
I highly recommend
Blink
it,
Radio.
And not just because I'm doing this show, I just think it's awesome, so you should check it out. But all of that stuff is on the homepage, and APH has been around a long time. I didn't know the tour was there, so I clearly don't pay attention. I'll have to do that. So, thoughts on any of that stuff?
I had to stay at home during the conventions, and I missed it all. And my only connection to it was the coverage and all the tweets and all that. So when people were live tweeting that Windows 8 demonstration, I was like, I wish somebody in that room was streaming it, and I, for God's sake, I hope somebody's recording it, and you guys answered my prayers, because when I saw that tweet with the link to the MP3, I jumped right on it. I felt so out of the loop when I wasn't there, and I couldn't hear anything. All I could see was tweets.
Yeah, it's really worth it to listen to, especially if you want to get the highlights of what Windows 8 is going to be like and how it's going to operate with screen readers. you know, a lot of screen reader manufacturers are going to have to do some really special things, and I put that in air quotes around that with Windows, like, to get it to work with, you know, with them. There are a lot of technological changes. There are a lot of interface changes. So, and Jeremy does a fantastic job of getting that across.
Our users in the chat room have some pretty decisive opinions about Windows 8. We had 12 people answer, and 9 said they would not install right away. 2 said no, and 1 said they were not sure. I really think that it's going to take some people using Windows 8 and kind of showing where the benefits are or are not for people really make the final decisions. It seems like there are a few that have played around with the beta and were generally not impressed at this stage of the game, and I would be very interested to find out among an average group of sighted computer users what their thoughts were about Windows 8, whether they felt like it was going to be easier or harder. I've, of course, read a lot of technical information, but not from anything from, quote, your average user.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing we have to keep in mind, and, you know, and this is true for all operating systems, is that the screen reader support isn't there. You know, other than SA and NVDA, the two major screen readers are not supporting Windows 8 in public, at least. So people who may have wanted to try it may not have done it because they weren't feeling comfortable with it, and, you know, not having access to their favorite screen reader and the usual commands may make it a little bit difficult, even though, you know, even though Narrator is much more improved, you've got, you know, and you've got SA and VDA working with the operating system a lot. It's still not the same, so I think it's going to take some time, you know, maybe 6 months to a year, for us to get a real sense of what people are thinking about Windows 8.
Well, one plus to the new narrators, they finally got rid of Microsoft Sam.
Oh no, what shall we do?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to commit suicide just because
there's no more sexy Sam out there. Oh my gosh. Another exciting announcement that it comes to us is from this fantastic company called Serotec. You may have heard of them. They released a...
Who are they?
They're pretty good. But they have a new thing called the Serotec Accessibility Anywhere package, and the name is pretty self-explanatory. Accessibility Anywhere by Serotec. I'll let Lisa maybe fill in some of the blanks and ambiguity around that difficult, you know, name, Accessibility Anywhere. But if you want to have a screen reader and other assistive technology services, this package is possibly for you. Lisa, could you give us some quick info about that? And I think we have a page going up here in just a second.
Sure. Basically, the Accessibility Anywhere package is some of our best programs, the ones that people are using on a daily basis, all together in one place. You know, when people heard about this at first, they really didn't get it. But more and more, when you are using software, you don't purchase a disk that comes in the mail. You purchase the ability to use the software. For example, I purchased a computer cleanup and maintenance program a couple months ago, and I have yet to see a disk, and I never will, because basically what I'm purchasing is service, and that's what this is. So basically, for $21.95, our CEO says for the price of a pizza, you can have System Access Mobile Network, which is our content where you have access to audio, podcasts, chat, email, sports, all in one place. And people say, well, I can go to those places on the web and listen to my podcasts here and get my sports scores here. And sure, you can. It's also the difference between going to the little produce market to buy your fruits and vegetables and going to a fish market to buy this or that. Or if you're really not into shopping particularly, you can go to one grocery store and find all your content there. So that's System Access Mobile Network. You also have System Access, which is our screen reader, and you have DocuScan Plus. And we are providing access, like I said, for $21.95 a month. Or if you want $240 a year, you can use it on one computer or one thumb drive, or you can pay for additional licenses so that you have it on additional systems. If someone, one thing here, and then I will finish up. If someone has none of Saratech's products, this is a fantastic deal. It is also a really good deal for someone who has, say, System Access Mobile Network, and they want to get something else, because essentially you're going to be paying about $5 more a month. And for that $5, you'll have complete access to a screen reader or to DocuScan Plus. And if you would like more information, I encourage you to give us a call. I'll save the number here. You can also find it on our site. It's 612-246-4818, and you can press the extensions for either sales or customer service, and we'll be happy to give you a hand and get you set up.
And, of course, all of the products are fantastic, but the DocuScan Plus is one that I really like because it also works on the Mac, and that's just plain cool. Fantastic if you need a product for scanning.
Talk about cloud.
Yeah, there you go. So you can again, be in the cloud, and that's exciting stuff. I'm notorious for losing CDs, so I'm happy that it's in the cloud. I know where that is, at least. Moving on to Google. There is some exciting stuff about Google, and I'm actually really excited about Google. I managed to steal a coworker's Nexus 7 tablet, which is a tablet that's been gotten a lot of acclaim recently, and I won't talk much about it because I know we're limited on time, but I had to give it back after the weekend. But it was a lot of fun to play with. Google has made huge strides in terms of Android and accessibility, and that's exciting to see. You may want to check out that Android show to get more information. But we also have a page we're putting up here that discusses some of those gestures. Android version 4.1, by the way, is called Jelly Bean. I love the fact that Android, if nothing else, even if you hate Android, you have to love the names. They give a dessert name for all of these things. We had Ice Cream Sandwich, and now we're on Jelly Bean. I don't remember all of them, but I know in the past we've had Gingerbread, and we've had Cupcake, and we've had Honeycomb, and
Froyo,
I don't know. You can't
clear.
Yeah, you can't go through them all without being hungry.
Next one is Key Lime Pie.
That's the one I want. Key lime pie.
I want pecan pie. Meringue.
Pecan pie.
Android pecan.
Yes.
Either way, Jelly Bean has a lot of these new gestures in it, and of course, it's the system that comes on the Nexus 7 by default, and I think some other tablets as well. But anyway, very exciting stuff. The gestures are very iOS-like. I know it's kind of unfair to compare the two because they're very different systems, but just to provide a point of reference, there's gestures for moving to previous and next icons and flipping through pages. And does anyone have any thoughts, or anyone in the chat or here live, has anyone played with Jelly Bean?
I have. It's actually really, it's nice to see the amount of improvements that they made in the last two versions. I think they're beginning to get to a point where, you know, a regular user might actually consider getting an Android device without having to consider adding like mobile accessibility on top of it. I think the biggest thing that they've added, and you know, even beyond these gestures, is the beginnings of the Braille support, and a lot of people would love it. Completed yet, but it's there. It's beginning.
I think that it's too bad that we went from all the way from an awesome thing like Ice Cream Sandwich to something like a Jelly Bean. I mean, come on. But anyway, from an accessibility viewpoint, I've just seen a number of demos. I checked out Ice Cream Sandwich at CSUN, And I could do some things with it, but I have to say I could not. I really could not figure it out. I felt really lost. But now when I hear about, when I read about and listen to some demos of Jelly Bean, I'm kind of with you. I'm like, really? I think we're almost reaching a point where Android is a practical choice for many, many, many blind users. And that is really exciting, right? Even though, you know, personally, I'm an iOS person. I have to say that the choice factor is just amazing, because as we know, different technologies meet different needs for different people.
Mm-hmm. And there are those that would argue that Android has been a choice for a while. I mean, I had an Android phone with 2.3. I don't remember what dessert that was, but
that was Android, I think.
Yeah, either way, it worked really well. I mean, for what I needed it to do, and I think it comes down oftentimes to needs and that sort of thing. But this is, I think, what's appealing, at least to me, about this particular release is there are some that are migrating from iOS to Android, and that migration isn't such a big deal because the gestures are, if not exactly the same in principle, they're very similar. And so that's really exciting. Any other thoughts or comments about Jelly Bean?
I
was just going to say, I started out with the very first Motorola Droid, and the accessibility has supposedly improved quite a bit. I haven't actually touched Jelly Bean yet, but I have seen a lot of other people on Twitter have it, and there are mixed reviews. But I think, like you said earlier, we have come such a long way in improving that accessibility, because if you look at what we had when they first started, it was accessible, but you had to have a phone that had a D-pad on it and a physical keyboard. You couldn't do anything really with the touch screen, and you had to get to certain elements of apps and programs by utilizing those arrow keys, and now you can just swipe or tap the thing that you want. So we're really making some strides forward, and I think that Jelly Bean's voice assistant, the demos that I've seen of that, sure beat the pants off of Siri. So, you know, I think that's one reason for sure to go with an Android device.
And Pratik?
And also, you know, one good thing about coming after iOS is that Android has the chance to fix things that, you know, we may think that Apple made mistakes on. And, you know, some of the gestures that Android has managed to use in its accessibility, like, you know, like the L-shaped gesture and going back and forward and going to home, I think those are really good and really innovative. So it's not only copying the gestures that exist on iOS, but they're also managing to add things to the accessibility space that, and we like to see that.
And they do that in general, I think, that they play off each other. I remember one of the reasons that I chose Android back with Gingerbread, or I don't remember what it was, 2.3, it was because of the dictation. I liked the fact that, you know, I could hold a cup of coffee or, you know, whatever in one hand and my phone in the other, and I could dictate to it, and it would enter text. And, of course, that's a feature now of iOS and, indeed, Mountain Lion. So I think, you know, it's interesting how these sort of ideas sort of incorporate themselves from one platform to the other and each kind of implement them in their own way. So anyway, very exciting stuff, Jelly Bean, and of course Android in general. Got that link up there, and of course we've got the podcast about Android that you can of course listen to. Before we go further, I want to go back. I mentioned earlier on about the convention that wrapped up, or the that are on the home screen of iBlink Radio. The NFB had its convention and the ACB had its convention, so both national conventions were held earlier in July. And I just want to go and go around, and also just to give folks in chat maybe a heads up, maybe you can start typing now, but to find out what was the biggest thing you saw at convention, and I guess we'll say related to technology. Maybe we should specify that. Let's start with, Byron, did you go to convention, either one this year?
I didn't go to either one of the conventions, but I really kept up on all of that while I was working and at home. And I want to say the thing that really piqued my interest the most was that Windows 8 demonstration, which I finally got to hear. So that was where I was just really wishing I was there and wishing some geek would stream it live from the room.
And we had a geek that recorded it. You can listen to that.
Yes, which made me very happy. It made me belatedly happy, but it made me happy.
Yeah, hats off to the geeks. Well, I too participated from home. I was an armchair convention goer this year, so I'll get to mine last. But Pratik?
Well, you know, just to begin with a general observation about some trends that I'm seeing. One particular trend this year I noticed about both conventions and you know, what we typically consider to be assistive technology companies, there was a serious lack of major announcements from those companies, other than looking at, you know, say the new Focus 40 or Focus 14, or a couple of minor products. I think we didn't really see much innovative from those companies. And this may be my bias speaking, but we're seeing more from your regular companies on accessibility than we are from those. I attended the ACB convention. I'm the chair of the Information Access Committee, so I kind of had to. But we
so
had
you,
some,
you didn't go to NFB, I take it.
I didn't, but I did follow the NFB convention really closely. I mean, you know, a lot of people probably saw my responses and on Twitter and things like that. But you know, we had quite a bit of an exciting program at ACB. You know, we had companies like Barnes & Noble coming. So I think, you know, one thing we're beginning to see is this this thing about accessing books. You know, now we have two major platforms. That's iOS, the iBooks platform, and Google Books being accessible to blind people on iOS and Android, respectively, and Google Books is also on iOS, and they're accessible. But we had Barnes & Noble coming to ACB doing focus groups on making their iOS app accessible, and that would be for the iPad and the iPhone. And, you know, that's really exciting to see. That means that, you know, shortly, within a couple of months, we're going to see that platform be accessible. We know that Barnes & Noble is working on making its Nook accessible. Nobody knows what Amazon is doing because, you know, they don't like to talk about it. But there are a couple of other things, too. You know, we have presentations, joint presentations with Google about the survey that ACB conducted in the fall of last year. So some really fascinating data coming out of that. Mm-hmm. And you'll see more on that as we publish data and papers. So there are some really good things happening.
One thing that you reminded me of when you mentioned books, it was very, very quickly mentioned and no details, but the representative from the Talking Book Library said that there will be a Bard app coming shortly. So I don't know that if that means next year, in a couple of months, but I'm excited to see what that will bring.
I can't wait till it shows up.
For the Bard app.
Yeah, I heard about it last year, though. They mentioned it. I forget what the woman's name was, but yeah, they did. And then I think they even said by the end of the year last year, although I could be wrong. They definitely mentioned it last year, and, well, it hasn't happened yet. But yes, very exciting stuff. And Daryl, I was wondering if you had disappeared because we lost all the ambient noise, but there you are. So what was the biggest thing you noticed about, you were at convention.
No, I did not go to convention. I should have been. I was supposed to be at NFB. Yes, but I did, of course, follow both conventions closely. I am on the NFB side of the house, however. And I think that I'm with Pratik here on this. I think that there was not a whole lot of anything really, really new, except for the you know, the Jelly Bean. It was very. I was hoping for more about the new, you know, Sendero Seeing Eye GPS app for iOS. Mike May gave a presentation at NFB. It sounded interesting, but I guess I was just hoping for more. I felt a little slightly disappointed on that front. I think that I was also, you know, I just really, on the technology side of the house, this was not a big, this is not a really big year. I will say one thing is that nobody's talked about yet, though. that I kind of like was the IDMate Quest, the new product from Envision America. That looks cool from an accessibility point of view.
Those of us from Directions for Me don't like to talk about that.
Uh-oh.
It's very expensive.
Whoa. Yeah, but hey, if it provides access to the world around you and gives you I guess it has a camera now and it has object identification and all sorts of awesome stuff.
Just to back up a little bit, Daryl, for those that don't know what the heck this is, it's a how in 10 seconds or less would you describe it, do you think?
It's a barcode reader with now access to the cloud so that you can, instead of having a hard-coded database, you get your database online through your Wi-Fi connection.
There's that cloud again. See it?
Yeah, everything is cloudy, right?
Wow. Well, that's good.
I can tell you that our content director was much enamored of the barcode scanner sold by AT Guys and ended up having one of them kind of jump into his suitcase for the trip home.
Ooh, awesome.
And that is usable with Directions for Me. So there really is a lot out there.
I think it depends on what your needs are and what you can or can't spend. You know, I mean, I think the barcode scanner that AT Guys and Horizons for the Blind sells is definitely a nice cheap route to do the same thing that the Quest can do. And I think it just depends on what your budget has and what needs you have. So,
barcode reading.
For those listeners who do not have a barcode scanner, I now have one on my iPhone, but even before that, you really can still get a great deal of information from the Directions for Me website, and I encourage you to try it. You know, I'm really an avid convention attendee, and as silly as that sounds, I'm an avid convention attendee whether I'm there or not. And I have my strategies and have actually thought about writing an article. I jokingly referred to it this year as playing the convention home game. And I followed tweets, and I read the programs of both conventions, and I, if there was live audio going to be broadcast, I wrote that all out on my calendar so that I could listen as my schedule allowed or download for later. I also looked at the names of all the exhibitors, and if they had a website and I hadn't heard of them, I visited it, I Googled them. There were one or two iPhone apps that I heard about that were coming out. And I wrote to the one about the possibility of beta testing. So the point is that if you're at home and you don't go to conventions and you've never gone and you don't care, there really is quite a lot that you can learn and do from home. And no, it doesn't really replace the experience, but you can have a different kind of experience and you can really interact with the information on your own time.
There definitely is, and another point I would make is oftentimes when I mention convention to people, they'll say, you know, I don't like all the politics about NFB and ACB, and I don't get into that stuff, and I think these people are wrong, and whatever it is. You know, it's possible to go to these conventions and not get into the politics at all. There's exhibit halls, there's speakers.
There's a lot of things happening,
There's a lot of things happening at both conventions. I mean, they both have fantastic programs, and you know, don't do the political thing. I probably, you know, I'm not supposed to say that, but I think it's a good reason to go is to look at some of these exhibits, ask questions of vendors, meet other blind folks or people that might be dealing with some of the same things you are, whether you're a student or a newly blinded adult or a person dealing with diabetes or, you know, whatever it is. There are usually groups within the convention that meet to discuss those things, and of course tons of technology groups. So even if you are just fed up to hear with all the political stuff or don't care about it or whatever, there's a lot to be gained from these conventions. I don't write them off, whether participating from home or going there physically. If that's your reason for not going, if that's your only reason, then just don't do the political stuff. That's
and I can't agree more. I mean, you know, as an avid ACB person, I'll say the same thing. I think, you know, people get different things out of different events and different activities. And you don't, you know, there's actually no way that you can do all the activities that even, you know, some of the activities that you're interested in. When you go to these conventions, half the time you end up missing them because there's just so much to do and so many people to meet and talk to. I mean, you know, I've gotten into these conversations that take me hours at a time.
It's amazing the people you meet.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, every single year that I've gone to ACB, I've managed to somehow miss the science fiction ice cream social, something that I pay for extra that I really want to go to, but I always miss it.
One thing I want to mention really quickly, and I do want to move on because we have a lot of other stuff that I want to try to get covered here this evening, but there was a device that was introduced and demonstrated, I know, at the NFB convention. I'm not sure if it was at the ACB one or not, so Pratik, you can maybe tell us. And the only reason I'm bringing this up, besides the fact that it's kind of neat, is because it's a blast from the past. Dean Blasey has a new note taker that's due to be released. It's Android-based. It has a Braille display, and it has a name that I don't remember. Anyone remember the name of that thing?
G2B or something?
G2B. Oh, Braille to Go.
Braille to Go. B2G. Yes. It's been abbreviated. Braille to Go. And for those that don't know Dean Blasey was around, I guess one could almost say ages ago now. I feel very old, but there was a thing called the Braille and Speak way back when. And the Braille and Speak and the Type and Speak and a bunch of things. Dean ran a company called Blasey Engineering, which created a lot of this stuff. And for a lot of people, that was their sort of foray into assistive technology. The Braille and Speak was a fantastic little note-taking device, very limited in its features by today's standards, but back then it was like it was the ice cream sandwich to have. It was like the ice cream sandwich and the sundae all in one. It was fantastic.
And it was
a lot of features.
Braille and Squeak.
Well, it was a neat device for its time. Truly revolutionary for what it did, and it really did, I feel at least, make it possible for a lot of blind folks to be employed or to be in school and study and that sort of stuff. It really revolutionized, I think, a lot of people's lives. Anyway, after that happened, Dean Blasey sort of has disappeared off the radar for a number of years, but he's back with his new Braille to Go or B2G product, and I don't know exactly what the price point is going to be. I heard between $2,000 and $2,500, but we'll see. It does have the Braille display. It will be Android-based, and I just think it's neat to see him back again. So I was kind of excited about that. Did they show this off at ACB, Pratik, or not?
No, they usually don't come to ACB unless they have a fun. They tend to be more exclusive to the NFB.
Well, we'll see what happens when it gets released. So, for those of you who know Dane Blasey and have wondered where he has gone since the Braille and Speak days, he's back. So that's exciting stuff. Moving along, we have a bunch of interesting things, including Georgie, which are apps for the blind. They help the blind and visually impaired, I should say. Let's see what our panel thinks. If anyone have any comments or thoughts about Georgie?
I think it's kind of neat. I think it brings Android to a huge segment of the phone consumer that otherwise would be intimidated by a smartphone, may that be iOS or Android, because it's so simple and kind of self-contained.
It does make Android a lot easier to use, and that's kind of its selling point. It makes it easy. What I was unclear on is how does it compare to MobileSpeak, which is kind of doing that, isn't it?
No, I think MobileSpeak is doing that, but I think this is far simpler than MobileSpeak. This is meant, you know, if I had to say, if I were to market this, I think that I would market this to the elderly population. People who are not comfortable with the newer technologies at all. I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I think the major problem I see is the price point. I mean, we're talking about $150, which could mean what? I mean, you know, we're talking about phones cheaper than that these days, and you're adding another, you know, doubling the cost of a phone.
Yeah, true. But you're getting some services out of it, though, because of the extra cost. One of those is they have a live assist sort of thing where you can ask a question and have it answered for you. One of the other things that's nice is that you push a button and it tells you when the next bus or subway is coming. And the other question I have is, will that work here in the U.S.? Because it was made in the U.K., and so does it have American public transit stuff in there as well?
I would almost be tempted to buy a phone and it if it had that. That would be an incredible thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is developed in the UK, but you can download a free 14-day demo, and we have a URL for that as well, which will appear either on screen or in the show notes. So if you have an Android device and want to play around with it, you can do that. Let us know if, in fact, it does do public transportation in the US. That would be kind of fun to know and fun to play with. Microsoft revamps Hotmail. I thought Hotmail went away. I thought it became LiveMail or LiveCom or...
No, they've kept it.
They keep it. Well, now they're changing it, and they're turning it into Outlook.com. And what
yes,
does this mean?
Are.
Does anyone?
I've tried it.
Excited about this?
Seems to be pretty popular. I mean, in the first 3 hours after its launch, about 1 million people went and signed into it. So it's going to be pretty popular. I mean, you know, they're combining Live.com and Hotmail.com into this single unified message. And I think looking at it, it seems to be actually, you know, looking at it from the accessibility perspective, it actually seems to be a lot better than Gmail.
Oh, wow.
Right out of the box. You can customize your keystrokes if you're used to using Yahoo or if you're used to using the old Hotmail. You can use those keystrokes. You can actually use your Gmail keystrokes with it. So it's really interesting to see that they're trying to attract all sorts of people, and I'm going to be using it for a while to see how it goes.
Fantastic. And so is Hotmail no more? If you have a Hotmail account, what has happened now? Do you have to migrate? Are you encouraged to migrate?
You can keep your account. What's happening is that you use this single unified place to log in. You get the same interface no matter what your address is. So you can still use your addresses. You can migrate to an Outlook.com address if you want to. You can keep your Live.com address, whatever you like.
Just as an aside, as a low vision user, I just went to Hotmail.com and Outlook.com, and they're essentially the same page with a different logo and a different picture. But I would assume that if you logged into your Gmail account from gmail.com, that it's probably going to give you the Outlook.com interface with maybe some Hotmail branding. But I don't have an account yet, so I can't really test that.
So you mean your Hotmail, not Gmail, but Hotmail from Outlook?
Right. If you go to Hotmail.com and Outlook.com, they essentially look like the same login page.
They are the same. That's because they changed over. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. they're changing the brand and the interface to be uniform. It's absolutely the same thing.
Hotmail.com still says Hotmail though, so that's kind of interesting.
Didn't they do this with Live though? If you logged in with Live, it was the same as with Hotmail, right? For a time,
yep.
Or
yep. And I think what they're going to do is they'll probably eventually move people over to Outlook.com.
So if you have Hotmail, or if you don't but are curious, check out Outlook.com, and that's exciting about the keystrokes. That's really neat. I'm glad they implemented that. That's going to, I think, make life easier for a lot of folks. Do they have Exchange Sync, too? I think Hotmail had it for a while, didn't it?
They do for mobile devices.
Yeah, so you might be able to get your mail pushed to your Android or iThing if you have that using ActiveSync, and we won't get too techie into that, but that's in unto itself is rather exciting.
Definitely.
Speaking of interesting things, there was a sort of sad event that happened. Dropbox had a bit of a data breach, and it's been, of course, one of many data breaches in the last couple of months. I think last month or the month before, we reported LinkedIn and a couple of other places had various data breaches. But in this case, a password with customer, not data, but names or email addresses or something like that was stolen or was leaked to somewhere.
Yes. It's almost becoming security fatigue these days because of the number of sites that we had to go to find out whether your information was leaked.
Dropbox, again, a cloud-based service which allows you to store files and access them from anywhere, is super popular. I use it all the time, and then I think, you know, a lot of people do. But yeah, again, another reminder, one of almost a monthly reminder that, you know, you really need to have passwords that are different from site to site, or change them frequently, or whatever your strategy is. And if you don't have a strategy, maybe research that and come up with a password strategy that works for you. There's a number of ways to deal with that, but better than having the same password on something like Dropbox and on your bank, you certainly wouldn't want that compromised. And you know, people have been known to do that sort of thing. So,
Darryl, also keep your data backed up, even with Dropbox, because even if you have your data in Dropbox, and yes, you have it on your local hard drive as well, but then once you start sharing Dropbox folders, then it gets more complicated. As a file deleted from one account becomes deleted from all the other copies of the folder that are shared, so you still have to back up.
Well, or use a service like LastPass or OnePass. One of these.
I was going to ask about that. What is the accessibility of that? What's the accessibility of OnePass? Does anyone know?
Well, I personally use LastPass, and it seems to work quite well with Firefox on Windows, and it works actually also on Safari as well. It allows you to have one master passphrase or password, or if you have a fingerprint device, you can use that to log in, and allow you to create individual passwords for individual sites, and allows you to store them automatically so that you don't have to worry about remembering them. And these are truly random passwords that you're not going to be able to repeat from one place to another. So it's an awesome service.
We should do a whole topic on just that at some point, because there are a lot of our alternatives. And this is sort of a reoccurring theme, this whole data breach and security breach thing and what to do about it. I realize we're way past the 10 p.m. hour Eastern time, and I want to thank everyone for sticking with us. I do want to go through a couple of things real quick and then talk about some apps that are in the news and that are really exciting, including one app that in a way has sort of revolutionized the way that we can use touchscreen devices. But first, I want to talk about a service that I've played with a little bit and really like. It's Amazon, their music service. For those of you who have used it, it has a thing, it has a cloud player, here we go again, that is pretty accessible, and they store music that you've purchased from Amazon in that cloud, and you can also upload music to the cloud. And the big announcement with it, though, is that now they have a feature like iTunes Music Match, whereby it will look at the songs you have on your hard drive, and it'll match them with songs that Amazon has in its catalog, so that those songs are essentially available to you on the cloud anywhere you go. And this is really exciting, because for $25 a year, you get up to 250,000 tracks, 10 times more than you get with iTunes Match. I have iTunes Match, but this is neat, 10 times more. Very exciting. I'm not sure how accessible the matching process is, but it's something I'll have to check out, because, well, it just seems really cool. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
It is cool. I'm actually looking forward to trying it. I have iTunes Match, and it works quite well, and I'm curious to see how Amazon service is different and how it's going to work. I'm probably not going to be able to try it for the next couple of weeks, but I am going to try it.
I'm a little scared to try it. And see, I tend to be the curmudgeon in a lot of this stuff. I'm a little scared to try a match service only because I have so much stuff and a lot of it's really obscure. And I'd hate to have something that's kind of rare get replaced with something else that, you know, they matched it and they thought it was this and now I've lost that file. So,
but you don't actually
don't do that with your...
It doesn't erase your originals. If it can find a match, it will, but it won't find a close match. It has to be an exact match, and if not, then it uploads the actual file that you have. So it doesn't look for the nearest thing.
Yeah.
So, like, it's even matched. I had some audio of various radio skits and stuff that I've recorded. So they're things that I recorded personally, and you know they're not even well tagged, and they managed to get matched and uploaded to the cloud. So obviously it didn't match them against their music library, because they're things that I recorded. So it's worth thought. And again, it doesn't take away your local files, which is
so, neat, so. So Byron, of course, any of us who are serious about radio broadcasting wouldn't allow iTunes or anything else to mess with our primary music library, right? Back up.
Well, that's kind of what I was afraid of. I mean, everything's categorized in such a way, and I didn't even like putting all my stuff in the iTunes library to begin with. And that really bogged down my iTunes after I loaded, like, terabytes of stuff. It was like, ooh, I'm full.
Yeah, now if you truly do have terabytes of stuff, just remember the limits. I think the Amazon thing is 250,000 tracks, and mm-hmm. iTunes is, what, 25,000 or something? I mean, more than, I think, what most... You know, people
Not
have, but
people
if you
have.
Truly have terabytes,
yeah.
you can run aground pretty quickly with that. If you are excited about Apple stuff, they are reportedly going to unveil the iPhone 5 and the iPad mini on September the 12th.
I'm excited.
And I'm excited. The iPad mini is getting some buzz because it's similar to the Nexus 7, at least in terms of dimensions. People are kind of excited about these mini tablets that are, fit more easily in a purse or easier to carry around, about the size of a Kindle, maybe if you've seen a Kindle. So it's kind of a cute form factor, bigger than the Touch or the iPhone, but smaller than the, what someone phrased, the clunky iPad. And I thought, how far have we come that we're referring to the iPad as clunky?
It's clunky.
It kind of is, because I just got an iPad 2. And I wish I had gotten the iPad 3, but now I'm really kicking myself. Because when you're laying in bed or something, if you're trying to look at the screen, it's not so bad if you're using gestures and stuff and you just have the thing on your chest. But if you're holding it up and trying to look at it, it's very uncomfortable, very unwieldy when you're in that that position to try and read. So I kind of wish I'd gotten a smaller form factor iPad.
I can see the allure of it now, having kidnapped the Nexus 7 for the weekend. It was nice to be able to hold that in one hand. And anyway, so that's exciting. The next app I wanted to talk about is one that I think Lisa wants to comment on, and it's one I am super jazzed about. It's called Flexi. It was demonstrated at the conventions and is now available. And we have a page going up here in just a second about Flexi. Flexi is spelled F-L-E-K-S-Y. It's not... It's possibly different than you may think. F-L-E-K-S-Y. And basically, it's an app that allows you to type information on a keyboard, but the keyboard isn't there. You type where you think the keys would be on the screen, and then it guesses what you're typing. It's such a difficult concept to explain, but the only way I can think of is if you put your hands on a table and just pretend you had a keyboard under them, and just type something like you know where the keys would be on your keyboard, and based on where your fingers land in relation to one another on the screen, it will sort of guess, this is the word they tried to type. And of course there's functionality to allow it to correct words and to sort of guess which words you're typing, and it's ultra impressive. You can really boost your typing speed with it. The drawback on the iPhone or the iOS is that you have to copy and paste your Flexi text into the app you want to use it with. There are buttons to send it as a tweet, to share it as a text message, or to email it. But if you want to put it, say, into Facebook, you have to copy and paste it because Apple doesn't allow these things to act as keyboards. But to sort of compensate for that, Flexi does have an API that allows developers to incorporate Flexi into their own applications. And I don't know if any developers have done this yet, but very exciting stuff. Lisa, you've used this. I know you've been excited about this for a while, right?
Yeah, to me, Flexi, in a word, really summarized what was new for this month. I'll tell a story on myself. I saw the announcement on Twitter that they were looking for beta testers. And I forget how it said it, and of course, how eloquently can you say something in 140 characters. But they basically said that they had this app, and you didn't have to type every letter correctly. You just had to have your fingers more or less in the right places. I thought, okay, this really doesn't sound like it's going to work, but this will be an interesting challenge to explain why it doesn't work and how it doesn't work. And I'm normally not so skeptical, but I really was. I just thought, this can't be. You know, at the beginning when we were talking about accessibility evangelists, it made me laugh because I've joked with people and said, you know, I feel like I've joined the First Church of Flexi and I'm ready to go knock on doors and get converts because I really didn't see how it could work. And I've basically gone from typing, I don't know, 6-8-ish word a minute on the native iOS keyboard to roughly 25 words a minute with Flexi. And I can tell you that there is content that has been produced by many people. Among them, Daryl and Allison had an event with the developers. And if you listen on an upcoming Triple Click Home podcast, and speaking of which, I would like to remind you of all of our podcasts. So if you're specifically interested in Android or Apple or a little bit of everything, we certainly have a podcast for you. But on the latest Triple Click Home podcast, which I'm not sure exactly when that will be out, but I've done a comparison of Flexi with the native keyboard app and with another app called Type and Braille. And Steve's concern about having to copy and paste the text from Flexi into another app is valid. However, for me, I found that any time if I take the time to copy the text from Flexi elsewhere, I'm still well ahead of game. The other night, I typed an email that was 3 or so paragraphs long with Flexi, and I thought, wow, I never would have done that on the regular keyboard. But what I've done, too, is if I'm reading email on my iPhone and I want to reply to emails, I just go back and forth. I type it in Flexi, and then I hit my app switcher, and I go to email, and I paste, and then I go back to Flexi, or read another email, or whatever. I really think that this is a great app. I do find that when I'm typing smaller words, I'm not always as accurate, so I might have to go down through my list of suggestions. But if you type a word like revolutionary or familiarize, not that you're going to type all of those, but it does have an easier time with the larger words because it can get more of a pattern. I should have stated this before, but we do have one more poll up, and that is about Flexi, so I encourage you to answer that. And now that I've spread my Flexi love, I'm just so enamored of this app. I think it's great. The developers are nice, very receptive people who are open to any suggestions and will take time to listen and to implement them. I really do believe that they are to be commended. Anybody else have any thoughts on Flexi?
Well, you know what's really fun is to just type a bunch of random letters into Flexi and then see what words it comes up with.
Oh, did anybody find what, for lack of a better word, I think of as an Easter egg? This is pretty cool. If you're trying to type a word in, like letter by letter, if you know it's not going to be in their dictionary, like my town is Tunkhannock. It sounds like a sneeze and it's spelled even weirder. So I had put that in, and it sounds like the regular iOS keyboard. But anybody notice what happens when you press the letter F? You don't get back Foxtrot as a phonetic. You get back Flexi.
Cute. Oh, very clever.
Cute.
That's cool.
So I have to say that I got to see one of the very first versions of Flexi that the developers allowed out of their lab, so to speak. I got to see it at CSUN. I was so impressed with the accuracy of the typing of the predictions it made. One of my friends was somewhere else, and I ran over and I said, "Hey, you got to come back with me to the Sendero room and check this thing out, because it was just that awesome." Now we've beta tested the app for a while. I do think, I still think it's great. I still use it quite a bit. However, I think integration really is going to be, integration is the thing, right? So I think that it, if you have a Braille display or if you frequently use a Bluetooth keyboard with your iDevice, then maybe the Flexi isn't quite as immediately useful as it is if you don't. And if Apple would somehow acquire the technology or would integrate it in as a keyboard, then we can be talking about a whole different situation.
And if you don't have dictation on your device, if you have an iPad 2 or an iPhone 4 or 3GS, if it'll run on that, then you have a much quicker way of inputting text, because right now I have a 4S and I find myself sort of switching between dictation for short things and Flexi for much longer things. And again, this is coming from somebody who can kind of see that on-screen keyboard. It's much quicker still to type this way than it is to use VoiceOver. So I'm game. I like it.
It's a really neat app, and I know we've gone way over in terms of time, but just to see.
Flexi. Docs. Rocks.
So yeah. It's very, very quick to
that
do
was
it.
Quick.
That was cool.
Now, I did that one-handed, and of course, it messed up the second word because I was trying to type really fast and whatever. So it's my fault. But the the app gave me a list of things it could find, and the exciting thing about that is again that I could type with one hand, with one finger even, and it'll help you if you are like me and are not super accurate. As Lisa said, rocks is sort of a small, well, she didn't say this, but rocks is a small word, and it guesses better with a longer word, so it's exciting. And yeah, I don't use it to type a short thing, but you know, I've typed long emails on the iPhone now with this. The other thing worth mentioning is that if you have your orientation unlocked, Flexi will announce if you've switched to landscape mode. And so if you have big hands like I do, and if typing in portrait is a pain, you can flip the iPhone into landscape mode, and then you have a much longer or wider space to use Flexi in. So that's real exciting stuff. So Flexi is exciting. I don't remember the cost of Flexi. It is not free.
$14.99.
It's the best $14.99 I've spent in a while.
And you're going to spend that much, at least on a Bluetooth keyboard anyway, so...
If not more,
if not more.
You're going to spend more on the Bluetooth keyboard, which I wouldn't be without, though.
So Flexi, check it out. It's in the App Store, Flexy. The developers are great. They're very active on Twitter. And, you know, it's just exciting stuff. Another app is Text Detective. Text Detective is sort of a scanning app. Sort of similar to KNFB Reader in terms of how it functions, that being that you basically use your iDevice's camera to take a picture of a document, and it will try to read it to you. I've not used this app, so let's quickly see if anyone on the panel has used Text Detective.
Not yet.
I was going to ask if it was any better than Zoom Reader. That's what I currently use for OCR.
And Lisa
has an Apple Viz
podcasts on it, and I'm hearing that it works considerably better on the iPhone 4S than it does on the iPhone 4. And you know, we may find later with the iPhone 5 if the camera is improved that it will work. But I've heard that it really does show its full potential the better the camera you have, and that seems to be the case with a lot of these scanning apps. I did also put up the results of all the polls, some change, because people filled them out after, but you're welcome to review those when you have a moment. It seems like people are divided on Flexi. More love it than are neutral. Some haven't installed it and don't expect they will, and some haven't and they're not decided yet.
You know, the one thing I haven't heard is anyone installing it and not liking it. I haven't heard anyone say, geez, I bought it, I installed it, and it's a horrible product. I wish I hadn't wasted the $14.95. I haven't heard anyone say that yet.
I think I've seen two who said, their tweets were something like, bought Flexi, think I wasted my money. And then about 8 hours, they come back later, and they're like, no, I didn't. It's great. And that was kind of annoying. You know, like, you really just have to practice with it a little bit and get it. And once you get it, it's like, it's amazing.
It really is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's how I felt at first when I had dictation on my phone. And I'm like, what am I going to use this thing for? And then when I realized I could type long form, can't really do that with dictation.
Well, it's exciting stuff. Check it out. Text Detective is the other one. I haven't used it either, but I've heard good things about it. I don't know how it compares to anything, but if you want to try to use your iPhone as a scanner, it basically, or iThing, it doesn't have to be an iPhone anymore, but you use the camera to take a picture of a document, and you can check that out. The other app, we've got a couple more apps here I just want to go through real quickly. Access Note, which is made by AFB, and I don't know. I'm curious what other people will think before I give my opinion of this, but basically it's a note-taking app. You can write your notes and import or export them into the text, you know, TXT file format. It has a note search feature. It has a listing of notes feature, and it's got a couple of other features as well, where we've got a page, of course, about the app and the announcement of it. What do people think about this?
I think that it's it sounds good to me, but not $30 worth of good.
They did announce a maximum price of 30, I think, is where why he said.
I think it is going to be $29.99 or whatever, something like that. That's not a maximum price. I think they're considering that pretty heavily. And yeah, I am concerned about that. It's even though I think note-taking is a concept that's sort of okay, and they're hoping that education customers will really look at it. And yes, they do have some interesting features. They've done some interesting things, and I would hope that they'll make it better in the future. But $29, I think, I'm not sure about. And, you know, you can sort of understand why they're doing it, because Apple takes a third, the company that they're working with is going to take a third, and AFB gets a third, but still, $29 is a bit too much.
Also, I think that I would recommend for many of the same features a simple app called DropText for 99 cents.
DropText, or else SimpleNote. SimpleNote's another one. I was hopeful that this would integrate with Evernote, which is a note-taking thing that I absolutely love. It doesn't appear to do that at this point, but there's a lot of alternatives, and like you said, Daryl, the alternatives are 99 cents or less in many cases. And I don't know. I guess I feel a little let down with this. I was hoping for more, although I'm glad they are venturing into the iOS space with this. I don't know. Any other thoughts on this? We have another app. Humanware is coming out with another app. I don't know what the name of the app is. The title of the article is New Humanware App Will Get Deaf and Sighted... What? Oh, deaf-blind and sighted people talking. I was confused about that for a minute.
I think it's called a communicator or something like that.
Is it the iCommunicator or something?
Something communicator.
I sort of had mixed feelings about this. The idea behind this app is that you pair your phone with the Bluetooth Braille display, and you hand the iDevice to the sighted person, and on your Braille display, as the deaf-blind person, you can type something, and it will appear on the iPhone screen. The sighted person then types something back to you on the iThing, and it shows up on your Braille display, and I thought, why not do this in the Notes app?
I just have one thing to say about this. Hand your iDevice to a sighted person, lose your iDevice.
No. Well, I think this is made for, like, doctor's offices and
oh, I know, but still.
You know, there's a legit need for that sort of thing, but
Somebody made a comment on the Cero... what's the usual... What is the name of the show that is the Serotalk sort of flagship?
Serotalk.
Yeah, Serotalk, yeah. They mentioned this before, that possibly a good reason why you would want to have something like this is that you give somebody, you have to turn VoiceOver off and then give them your phone, and then they type, and then you have to turn VoiceOver back on and then read it, and, you know, handing the thing back and forth is a pain. And so you hand them an iPhone, which, you know, everyone knows how to use for the most part. They type on the on-screen keyboard, which is pretty intuitive, and then you type back on your device, and you each have your own thing to read on, so it makes it a lot easier to communicate. It would be a nightmare to try and sort of hand a thing back and forth, especially if you're deaf-blind.
You can do that with a Braille display,
what you're
going to
do, you know.
But you can already do that with a Braille display in the Notes app, Byron. You've got your Braille display, which is separate. You type into your Braille display's keyboard. You already have this capability,
But with typing with the Braille display on require VoiceOver, and so therefore typing for them would be different.
Yes, it very
the typing
well
experience
good point.
For somebody
That's,
very unnatural for them to do. They wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But if you turn off the VoiceOver, you lose the Braille display.
Yeah.
Yep, pretty much.
And also,
so there really is a use for that.
Yeah. And you may not want to hand your phone to a complete stranger, but you know what? If I had a choice, just from a purely economic standpoint, I'd sooner hand over my iPhone than my Braille display.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, one drop and ooh.
But wouldn't you need to have VoiceOver on? Otherwise, when they type to you as the deafblind person, it's not
designed,
going to...
The way that it's designed is that it doesn't use VoiceOver to work. It essentially uses the Braille display that you're using, and it communicates with the Braille display behind the scenes, and then VoiceOver's off for the user who's typing at you.
Ha-ha. That's the difference this app provides, then.
Oh. I'm still on the fence, but I think it's, and again, it's good that they're doing it. Anyone know the price tag of this, not counting the Braille display, which of course would be assumed?
I don't think anything's been published yet.
It's coming soon. Looktel Breadcrumbs app is coming soon. It's made by, of course, Looktel. Looktel made the money identifier, which you can tell it's getting late, folks. I apologize. Anyway, the Breadcrumbs GPS app basically will allow you to walk a route, and you can drop a virtual breadcrumb. And what will happen is then you can guide yourself to the breadcrumbs later. So a couple of ideas of where you might use this is you could drop a breadcrumb, say if you live somewhere in a rural area and there's a place you need to cross a dirt road or something, you might drop a breadcrumb there. You might drop a breadcrumb as you are approaching a particularly difficult type of intersection, and this way, you know, it can remind you of how the intersection is laid out when you get to it later. I spoke with a former client of mine who was excited about this because he thought he might be able to use it when camping. Drop a virtual breadcrumb, say, at the tent site, and then you wander off or whatever. You can, you know, have it guide you back to that. It doesn't plan a route. It doesn't even use the map. It just saves the GPS coordinates of the breadcrumbs. So it doesn't care if you're on a street or if you're in the middle of a lake. You can drop a breadcrumb and then go from crumb to crumb, as it were, sort of guiding yourself along. So very Hansel and Gretel-ish, if you've read that story. You literally shake the phone to drop a breadcrumb. I thought that was sort of a neat kind of gesture.
Shake your phone, breadcrumb falls out.
Yeah, they should have a little sound, you know. I don't know. I'm not sure of the price. I've seen a couple of tweets that have been submitted to the App Store, but that's... I haven't seen it be published yet, but be on the lookout for that by Looktel, the Breadcrumbs GPS.
So I have an interesting idea for it, because Looktel has said publicly that they will soon be adding, soon after its release, they will add the feature to record information, to make an audio recording associated with a breadcrumb. So in its initial form, I'm concerned about accuracy. I don't know if the phone's GPS, the iPhone's GPS is accurate enough to say, you know, help you find your way back to your campsite. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That will remain to be seen. What I see it very useful for, and what I'm really, really excited about and hopeful about, is actually for planning routes. For somebody who has difficulties remembering the steps involved in a fairly complex route, maybe the route can be run once or twice. Breadcrumbs can be established at key points along the route, and the what happens when you reach those breadcrumbs is you hear a recording that you've made or somebody's made that says these are the next steps that you take once you've reached this point in the route. So then I think the phone doesn't quite have to be as accurate if you're using the app for that purpose, because you're just using it to help you move along a route.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I use my phone in Minneapolis, it's always about a half a block wrong. It often says I'm on a street that I'm not.
Ways.
It is. I wouldn't trust it. I almost never use it with routes because of that.
You know,
it's too inaccurate down. And admittedly, that's a pretty, busy place with tall buildings. And
yeah, I was going to say, I have that same problem in downtown Chicago, where the tall buildings give you that canyon effect, whereas in downtown Crystal Lake, we've got short little buildings, and the sky is visible pretty much no matter where you're at, and it's almost always much more accurate in the suburbs than it is in downtown.
Another use might be to put a breadcrumb somewhere before your bus stop if you take a bus home, and occasionally find yourself nodding off, as I've done on occasion.
That's useful, yes.
Or you have a driver that doesn't announce the stops. Again, not super accurate, but maybe put it 2 or 3 minutes before you get there. So if you're a little bit off, no big deal, but just sort of something to wake you up and say, hey, get ready. You're within 3 minutes of your bus stop or your train stop. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how people utilize this and what applications people come up with for it.
Yeah,
any other thoughts
on...
Yeah,
I like the fact that it has a mode where you can put it so that you're not necessarily hearing audio feedback, but when it gets to that next breadcrumb, it vibrates.
Yeah,
that's exciting. Yes.
Yeah. And also for people who have trouble with route planning, if you use it for a route, even if it's a bit off, apparently then what you can do is you can have it reverse that route. So I think it's one of those things that it really will be one of those tools that is kind of only limited by people's imaginations, which is, I really enjoy watching that whole process develop.
I think between that and Flexi, we've had a lot of innovation this past month.
Absolutely.
On the iOS side of the house, for sure, yep.
Well, and then there's Jelly Bean.
I really think breadcrumbs should have been developed under Android, because I think it would have been especially appropriate thematically with gingerbread. That's another issue altogether.
I'm
all for something that comes out with now we're at the barbecue potato chip version of the cheddar.
Wow.
So who knows what they'll do next.
Speaking of Android and GPS, Jelly Bean has the ability to tell you when your next bus or train is coming, even without that Georgie app. If you're using the Google Now service, when you begin your commute, it knows what time that usually is, and it will tell you when the next train is coming and all that. So that's cool, and GPS apps are getting more and more interesting as we go along, so we'll see what kind of comes out with the Android stuff as well.
It's a brave new world, as Aldous Huxley said, and I think it's, we're going to see a lot of neat innovations, and it's going to be fun to watch how people take advantage of it. We do have one more announcement coming up, but before we get to that, I'd like to thank our panel for being with us today, and again, just hang with us here. We have that announcement in just a moment. But Prateek, thanks for joining us. If people want to contact you or learn more about you, do you have a website or an email address that people might use?
Actually, I got a private message from Prateek, and he had to drop off about 5 minutes ago because he had another commitment that he had to take care of. But if you look in the show notes, if you look actually on the main page for this event, you'll see a link for the contact info for each of our presenters. And when the show notes are available, you will see that as well. But our thanks to Prateek for participating.
And thanks also to Byron for participating. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you can thank me and Daryl for cracking up and installing the show.
Well, no, yeah. I think you've not stalled it. You've kept it going. So, you know,
well, there
I
you
mean,
go. Cool.
People would fall asleep if it was just me talking. So I appreciate the rest of you. I really do. And Daryl, of course, thanks again for being with us this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. Apologies for my tech gremlins this evening. I've been battling them over here. So it's been great to be on again. If anybody would like to find out more about what's going on, go over to blindaccessjournal.com. And you can learn all about our structured discovery approach to playing with iOS and other technologies. We've done some interviews. We've done a few different things. So blindaccessjournal.com. Check out what Allison Pilliker and I have been doing with podcasting lately, and with our check out the Desert Cafe on ACB Radio Interactive Sundays, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, and you can check out the just amazing Desert Cafe production crew each week.
Well, great. Thanks again for joining us. And before I turn it over to Lisa for the big announcement and the final good night, I would like to thank everyone for tuning in. I know we've gone way over the time limit here, and I was told I could go a little bit over, so I apologize, but I really appreciate you guys hanging in there, and hopefully you've enjoyed all the stuff we've covered. I don't know if my info is in the show notes or not, but if it isn't, I'm at Steve of Maine on Twitter. Maine like the state, because that's where I was from before I moved to Minnesota. Steve of Maine, or email. Hopefully that'll be in the show notes, because it's Steve at Sawson, my last name, S-A-W, C as in Charles, Z as in Zebra, Y as in Yellow, N as in November.com. Very difficult last name, and would love to hear from people as well. And, of course, we have an address. If you have ideas for articles that you'd like to share or submit for consideration, and Lisa can give you that, as well as the final announcement of the evening. So thanks again from me, and have a great month. Lisa, over to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that. The Twitter feed is Serospectives, Serospectives, all one word. And we try to give you some tech, some just ordinary real life kinds of things. It is mostly content from other places, but we try to bring you a variety. And hope you enjoy it, and encourage you to follow us and see if you like what we are posting. And if you don't, feel free to tell us that as well. Well, some of you have asked and been very patient, and we reviewed the submissions that we received for our Smoking with Serospectives contest. If you did not hear all about the Bradley Smoker and the other neat devices that you can use in your summer cookouts, please feel free to check that out. You can find that special by going to Serotalk, Serotalk.com. But we had a contest where we asked people to submit their funny or embarrassing barbecue stories. And we got a nice variety. Some were very touching. And it was obvious that a great deal of thought went into these stories. But as is the case in many things, we could only have one winner. And so we are very pleased to congratulate Bill Freeman of Arkansas. His house is going to be the place to be, because he will be receiving the Bradley Smoker, which, again, was reviewed on our special. And we also have the standalone just about the Bradley Smoker that you can download if you like. He is also receiving the iGrill thermometer, which can be used with an iPhone or an iPod. I would assume the iPad as well. And finally, he is going to be receiving a cooler of goodies from Omaha Steaks. So Bill's house will definitely be the place to be. And our congratulations to him for his fine story. Before we go, I want to remind you of one other thing, and that is that we do have a survey that we're asking you to complete about the podcasts and what you like and you know, what you might change, any thoughts like that. It does ask for some basic information, nothing confidential. It's all anonymous and is then compiled. And you can also find that survey in the show notes, which will be posted. They're usually posted Friday or Saturday, all depending, at sarotalk.com. I would like to once again thank you all for listening, for your great comments and chat. If you want, you're welcome to write and let us know what you thought about the event or about the polls, anything that's on your mind. You can write to content@sarotech.com. I'm actually sitting here debating, is it Sarotech or Sarotalk? I should know. It's one of those things that has temporarily flown the coop. So, everyone have a good night. Thank you for listening. And we hope to see you back in September, where we will review the tech stuff that made news for the month of August. Thanks for listening.